And now, live from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Welcome to Thursday edition of the Malloy Podcast. It is the 28th. Come on, watch. 29th of March 2018. Glad you could make it. So earlier today, I saw this little item. Frank Page, who is the former president and CEO of the Southern Baptist Convention. Southern Baptist Convention. Frank has revealed that he decided to resign his position over what he calls, quote, a morally inappropriate relationship, end quote, that he has had with an unspecified person or persons. Now, let's keep in mind, this guy is insanely anti-gay. What does that usually tell you? Local news station, television station in where? Here in Georgia? Reports that Mr. Page initially announced that he was retiring from his post. Time to retire. From the Southern Baptist Convention, he announced this on Monday, a couple days ago. And then he released a statement Tuesday acknowledging the real reason for his resignation. It was, in his words, an inappropriate relationship. God, these guys just crack me up. I'm sure Jesus has forgiven him. He'll be the first one to tell you that. Whatever it is. I mean, not that the freak needs anything forgiven, but he thinks he does, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, this is part of his statement. I love this shit. I love to listen to how they word this. It's just, there must be a website where religious freak nuts can go when they're caught with their pee-pee someplace it shouldn't be, and they can just download a statement that they then release to the media. Here's his, quote, out of a desire to protect my family and those I have hurt, I initially announced my retirement earlier today without a complete explanation, which would maybe indicate he was going to give us one. Not. However, after further wrestling with my personal indiscretion, it became apparent to me that this situation must be acknowledged in a more forthright manner. It is my most earnest desire in the days to come to rebuild the fabric of trust with my wife and daughters, those who know me best and love me most. Oh, bullshit. I mean, come on. In the first place, who really cares if some religious freakoid who's been fucking over people's minds for God knows how long with this religious crapola finally gets caught or thinks he's going to be caught doing something that is totally counter to his religious bullshit that he puts out there for everybody else to believe. And then they issue a statement, oh, to protect my wife and daughters. Oh, Jesus, I hate these people. Now, a couple years ago, Page, the guy I'm talking about here, Frank Page, supported kicking a community church out of the Southern Baptist Convention, the Newhart Community Church, because its pastor of that church, Danny Cortez, had announced that he had changed his views on the acceptance of homosexuals in his conversation. This is what Mr. Frank Page, who just resigned, what he said at the time. Quote, when you love someone, you tell them the truth about their actions. By its action on behalf of the convention, the executive committee is now telling the New Heart Community Church that its failure to condemn homosexuality breaks the heart of God. Breaks the heart of God. You stupid son of a bitch, Frank Page. You think your crazy, goddamn, omnipotent creator of everything God gives a fuck? If one preacher at some little ass community church says, you know what, maybe gays aren't all that bad, that breaks his heart. No, Frank. What breaks his heart, your God, is you and the rest of you fools' unending stream of hypocrisy, lies, deceit, your weasel words, your bullshit breaks the heart of God. Oh, man. Go to hell, Frank. Go to hell. Now, whether or not the truth of his indiscretion ever emerges, I frankly don't give a shit. You know it's not about a woman. You know that. I just go apeshit over stuff like that. I really do. And you know why. If you're a regular listener to this podcast or my ravings every night, you know why I go apeshit. Because these people set themselves up as the moral arbiters, the ethical arbiters, those who decide, working with the great sky spook, what is right behavior, what is wrong behavior, what is to be condemned, what is to be blessed. And they know because they have a direct line to this imaginary friend they have, and the imaginary friend keeps pumping shit into their heads, and they keep spewing it out, ruining the lives of how many people because a person happens to be female, or happens to be gay, or happens to be this, or happens to be that. So fuck you, Frank Page, and the horse you rode in on, all of you people, all you religious nutbags, why don't you just stop? If you want to pray, pray. If you want to worship, worship. But why don't you leave politics and the rest of us the fuck out of it? Right? I didn't bring the ball down. I don't have my squeeze ball. Daddy's got a squeeze ball popping, or no, something like that. Oh, what a way to start the podcast. I can't handle the hypocrisy. And these mealy-mouthed bastards, every time an incident, whatever this is, an incident like this occurs, they come on with that whiny, ow, it occurred to me. It occurred to you after the fact. It occurred to you. It didn't occur to you before the fact. Where was your great religious horseshit before you did whatever you did, Mr. Page? Where was it then? Situational concern. I mean, before you did it, your body was just churning with all kinds of curious hormones, right? So you went ahead and did it, whatever it was. And then after the fact, you come out, oh, my wife and daughters, ooh. Now, here's the thing. Lest you think I'm being too much of a prick with this guy. Here's the thing. I don't care if Frank sleeps with a doorknob. I couldn't care less. It is none of my business. But you know what? What goes on out here in the world is none of his fucking business either. No, it really isn't. According to those religious people, the business that goes out on out here is the business of God. What are they supposed to do, these individuals? Shut the fuck up and pray for their own salvation, their own forgiveness. They all are willing to tell you that they're born in sin because they came out of a woman. That makes them born in sin. We're all sinners, right? Fuck no, we're not. Sinners. Jesus. Am I making my point? Is it coming through what I'm trying to say? What? Have I mentioned yet tonight how much these people piss me off? And it's unending. I mean, this happens with alarming regularity. It never stops. It's the nature of this religious bullshit to condemn people because of who they are. I'm not talking about condemning people because they're murderers or rapists. The state is supposed to take care of that, right? But to condemn somebody because of who they sleep with, who they have, not sleep with, condemn somebody because they have, who they have sex with? It's such a scam. It's such a scam. And it's just so infuriating when you think about the people who have died because of religious bullshit. People who have been tortured, burned at the stake, torn to pieces, thrown into gas chambers. All this goddamn violent shit because of religion. And here we sit on this little blue dot, this insignificant grain of sand among a trillion, trillion, trillion grains of sand in an unending universe, as if there is some sky spook watching who's sleeping with who. Are you crazy? Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They're nuts. So, Frank, former head of the Southern Baptist Convention, you miserable son of a bitch. If you want to live a decent life, here's what you do. Shut the fuck up and go live your life. Don't harm people. That's all you have to do, Frank. Just do no harm. That's all. That's your key to a great life. Do no harm. With your condemnations and your finger pointing and your horse shit until it becomes your turn, right? Until finally, the lusts of the body that have been boiling inside you for God knows how long suddenly escape. And then you drag your wife and your daughters into it. Oh, I was going to just leave it alone, but my wife and daughters. Oh, right. Before they find out from somebody else, you sneaky son of a bitch, that's when your concern about your wife and your daughters presents itself. When you know they're going to find out anyway, so get ahead of the story, right, Frank? To hell with you, Frank. Woo! You know I can't stand it, Kathy. You know I can't stand it. It's bad enough that religion has so ripped this planet, the population of this planet, into a billion bloody chunks. That's bad enough. The unending war and murder and killing and rape and arson and gassings and hangings and because of religion. That's bad enough. But when these self-appointed or elected leaders of various denominations all of a sudden feel the compulsion to come forward and confess, oh, what made you do what you did, Frank, that you have to confess? Oh, that's right. The devil made you do it. That's right. You miserable shit, you. Jesus. Okay, moving right along. 2 days ago, Tuesday, a federal court in Massachusetts ruled that when politics damages climate, civil disobedience should be allowed to save the day. Okay, it wasn't a federal court. It was a state court, Massachusetts. Here's the deal. This has been going on for about a year. Hundreds of people who live in Massachusetts have fought to stop the construction of a high-pressure fracked gas pipeline. It's set to run through 5 miles of West Roxbury, which is a Boston neighborhood. The protests got increasingly heated people sitting in, refusing to vacate the holes that were dug for the pipeline. People got in the holes. Eventually, there were some 200 arrests. Now, we haven't heard a lot about this, have we? I haven't. Of those 200 people, a bunch of them faced criminal charges for trespassing and disturbing the peace. The peace of what? The peace necessary for these corporate predators, these capitalist murderers, these earth defilers to fucking go ahead and continue to destroy the planet. That's called disturbing the peace if you protest. What they're doing, just business as usual, just trying to make America energy independent. However, 2 days ago, the final 13 protesters who were facing charges were found not responsible by a Massachusetts judge. Not responsible. The judge ruled that the potential environmental and public health impacts, that means destruction, caused by the pipeline, including the potential role that this shit that goes through the pipeline has in increasing climate change, global warming, that, according to the judge, made the public's disobedience legally necessary. How about that? Good on you, Judge. Now, environmental activists and climate activists have been trying to use that necessity defense more and more in recent years to tackle the people who are killing everything on this planet, including themselves, but they're too fucking stupid to realize it. So that necessity defense. But this is the first case, according to what I have here, where a judge ruled defendants not responsible on the basis of that defense. That's according to an organization called the Climate Disobedience Center. Boy, I like that one. Climate Disobedience Center. Goddamn right. Maria Markham, who is the director of that center, told Think Progress, quote, "We believe this is a first. It's pretty powerful to us that a judge listened very carefully and determined essentially that it was necessary for these people to take this action in an attempt to prevent a greater harm." Now, I realize that's not part of codified law or maybe not even settled law. To prevent a greater harm. You commit a small infraction of the law in order to prevent a greater harm. Usually what happens, Catholic nuns who are in their 80s will fucking cut through a fence at a nuclear arms facility, get inside, take bottles of their own blood that they have collected, and write "no nukes" or "peace" on the walls of these containment sheds where Christ only knows what's going on inside. And these 85-year-old nuns will then be arrested and put in fucking prison. Put in prison. It's necessary for people to take action in an attempt to prevent a greater harm. Now, the thing that I've always been taught about civil disobedience, the essential rule is this. If you are going to put yourself on the line to disobey an unjust law and to make it obvious that you're disobeying it, until that law is removed from the books or until something more positive happens, you have to be prepared to take the responsibility of your actions. And usually the responsibility of actions against the corporate state is fucking jail. Jail. Or heavy fines. Jail for protesting against the corporate state that is trying to kill everything that's alive. Here's a definition for you. The necessity defense. It's a legal construct through which people can argue that a crime was justified in order to prevent a greater harm. However, in the context of climate change action, trying to stop these earth killers from continuing, it's a tool, this necessity defense, that has found limited use. One of the tenets necessary to use that defense is to prove that the threat was imminent and couldn't have been avoided through legal means. And that required the use of non-legal means. Now, the protesters in West Roxbury outside of Boston argued that the pipeline constituted a local environmental risk, a catalyst for climate change, and that their elected officials didn't succeed in having the project blocked or rerouted. Now, let me go back to that. One of the tenets of the necessity defense proved that the threat was imminent. What constitutes an imminent threat where it concerns global climate disruption? Imminent has the word imminent has a very specific definition. Immediately, imminent. It's about to happen. Now, we all know, don't we? I think we all know that we're not all going to see the temperature of the Earth go up 10 degrees Celsius in the next 24 hours. Maybe that the next 500 years. But it is going up. So what's imminent? Maybe imminent in this instance would be that point beyond which there's no return. Now, some scientists say we've already crossed it. That at this point, global climate disruption cannot be stopped. It can be slowed while we wait for some sort of technology, maybe some technological miracle that will reduce the amount of excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So what's imminent? Now, the prosecutors in this case, the people, the human beings who are charged with bringing charges against people who are putting themselves on the line to stop something as hideous as the end of life on this planet because of, take a look at Mars, take a look at Venus. I mean, what the fuck? Look wherever you want to. There are plenty of examples, right? So the prosecutors, I wonder what they think when they have a case that is presented to them and they have to, by law, prosecute the case against people who are literally trying to save other people. I wonder if these prosecutors wrestle with this, have trouble sleeping at night. I would imagine some of them would. But because these prosecutors understood that the people in this neighborhood had what they considered to be a legitimate claim, they downgraded the charges from criminal to civil during the lawsuit, which prevented the protesters from mounting a full defense in front of a jury. However, the judge allowed each one of the 13 defendants 2 minutes to explain his or her actions against the project. And then he decided to find them not responsible, which is, I didn't know this, the civil equivalent of not guilty, on the basis of necessity, that the necessity defense in this case was completely applicable. That's what the judge decided. Now, the ruling didn't prevent the pipeline from going operational. That's going to happen anyway. These fuckers don't care. They don't care if the pipeline erupts. They don't care if there's explosions. They don't care if people die. They don't care if people are devoured by flames. They don't care if 40 years from now, this fucking pipeline might have been the trigger that throws everything into global warming that is unstoppable. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is the goddamn 13 people. What were they doing, right? That's all that matters to these people. So the ruling didn't prevent the pipeline going operational. But the company behind it, Spectra Energy. Spectra. Wasn't that a character in a James Bond movie? Some evil bastard? Spectra? Hydra. Well, that was Hydra. Spectra. Anyway, Spectra Energy was forced to admit on the record that it did not have a safety plan in place in case of a catastrophic failure. Why should they? If there's a catastrophic failure, they'll just rely on the local fire departments and emergency management organizations to come and rescue and put the fires out and save people's lives. Spectra Energy, the people who run it, don't give a shit about the people a catastrophic event might affect. And the shareholders of Spectra Energy, they're fucking brain dead to begin with. Who invests in companies now that are involved in oil, gas, and coal extraction? Who does that? Greedy people who don't give a shit about human life. Unbelievable. Nah, very believable. This is America. This is what we do. So even though Spectra Energy more or less said the people of East Roxbury and any place else these cretins do business, what they more or less said was, fuck you. You know, this is our company, our business, our pipeline, our gas, our this, our that. You people are just an irritation. Get away. That's the attitude. That's the attitude. And it's pretty hard to fight against that. But there are still mechanisms in place. And this necessity defense is one of them, provided you find a court that will even consider a necessity defense. The truth is the legal system can make a huge difference in deciding what's right and giving those people who are concerned about what capitalism is doing to everything and everybody a chance to present a voice for the environment. Ms. Markham, the Marla Markham, the director of the Climate Disobedience Center, said this, quote, I think it's important to continue putting in the laps of people like judges, prosecutors, and juries the opportunity to make a decision about what is right in this moment. Now listen, people who occupy those roles care deeply and are worried about climate and the future for their children and grandchildren, and occasionally show a feeling of relief or gratitude that some group has brought into their sphere of power the ability to really hear and evaluate based on all of the evidence. End quote. So, for now, the decision in this court doesn't set any legally binding precedent. Of course not. Of course not. But it definitely sets an example for people who are trying to get the courts to take their concerns into account and not just always or most of the time rule in favor of these corporate predators, these capitalist monsters. And occasionally ruled in favor of the people who are trying desperately, since the federal government doesn't give a fuck anymore. People who are trying desperately to say something. You know, we have this little old planet here. It's all we have. We have our children. We have our civilization. We have our libraries. We have the potential for grandchildren. We have all this stuff. And the energy companies are killing it. Is there no basis to stop them? Is there nothing? Is there no way to say to these companies, fuck your profit and your company and you, stop it? We have a federal government that is aligned with business interests, then give a shit about the people. And the inclination of that government is to crack down on justifiable protests. With legal consequences. Lock them up. So based on that, then it's obvious that judges are going to face more of these cases in the future. I just hope that they will rule beyond the law. When the laws were written about trespass, I don't think one of the considerations written into those laws was the possibility of global death because of climate disruption. But it's here now. So the decisions of those judges and those courts, either for better or for worse, is going to affect and shape the world until it ends. Let's take a break. Catherine, if you would please, we'll be back momentarily. Everybody's blood all pumped up now, huh? You ready? Ready to rock and roll? I'll be back in a minute. Stick around. You know, another one of the right-wing witches, no respect to real Wiccans. All right, bitches. And you know, I'm uncomfortable using the term bitch because it has such a sexist connotation. But I think where it concerns Laura Ingraham, one of the Fox News bitches, I don't have too much of a problem using it. She apologized today to David Hogg, the Parkland student, after she, Laura Ingraham, gloated about the fact that he got rejected from a couple of colleges when he applied. Now, this kid has a 4.2 GPA. Why he got rejected, nobody knows. At least of all, the bitch, Laura Ingraham. The bitch has no idea. But she went on, this is an adult woman. She went on her fucking little sewer show and attacked this kid, David Hogg. Why? Because he was one of the leaders of the student protests that put a couple of million people in the street to protest gun violence. That's why. And if Laura Ingraham is anything, she gets on her goddamn knees in front of the NRA. After she made her bitchy comment, a couple of sponsors, a couple of advertisers announced they were pulling sponsorship from her show. Oh, what a shock, right, bitch? You go on your toilet sewer Fox show and attack a 17-year-old who is working for peace and justice while you, bitch, work for violence and hatred and anything negative you can come up with, and then advertisers start to bail, and all of a sudden, Laura, oh, it's time to apologize. Oh, darn, I'm sorry. You goddamn phony. And then she added, after she made her little toy apology, and I don't think it was an apology, any student should be proud of a 4.2 GPA. And that was a tweet. She added, quote, for the record, I believe my show was the first to feature David immediately after that horrific shooting. Oh, stop it. In the first place, he's not David to you, bitch. He's Mr. Hogg. And yeah, it was a horrific shooting, but you don't give a shit about that, Laura. You're on your knees to the NRA. You don't give a shit about this. So yesterday, David urged supporters to contact companies who sponsor the Bitches program. And David's sister, Lauren, also called for the poor, wounded, lost Melania Trump, who has this big effort, I guess is what you call it, to stop cyberbullying. And she's married to that orange bastard, right? Lauren called for First Lady Melania Trump to intervene on her brother's behalf and stop the bitch from cyberbullying her brother, the Parkland survivor, one of the kids who didn't die. And the bitch insults him. It's just almost unspeakable what these scum, these right-wing religious and political scum do. They anything that's decent or good, or an attempt to make things decent or good for everybody, they attack. These are evil people. These are evil, rotten people. How about the Pope? How about the Pope? Here's the story. The Roman Catholic Church, over its history, especially beginning in the late 15th century, the 16th century, when all the white people started to leave Europe to go explore and find out whether or not the world really was flat and all that other bullshit. And usually these explorers would go in the name of the king or the queen and the church. And the church, of course, was the Holy Roman Church. You know the story. When these so-called explorers arrived on the shores of other landmasses, the first thing they did if they came into contact with other human beings is kill them. Try to steal. Where's your gold? Where's your gold? Or tried to convert them to a miserable fucking religion that had nothing to do with indigenous people, and they wanted nothing to do with it. They had their own spiritual beliefs. Not religious, spiritual. But the white explorers, well, if you don't believe in our Holy Roman Empire, Jesus, God, we're going to cut your fucking head off. I mean, that's very simple. We're going to burn you at the stake. We're going to hang you. We're going to kill you. You don't deserve to live. In addition to seeding these populations with all sorts of bacteria and viruses and all kinds of shit to kill them off that way. A couple of centuries later, when the Europeans started to establish colonies and started to take over other people's land masses, like North America, like Australia, like pick a country, they established institutions that would scrub out of the indigenous people their culture, their belief system, their spirituality, everything, and turn them into good little fucking slaves who would work the land for the white people and worship the Jesus God, understanding full well that if they didn't worship the Jesus God, they'd either be killed now or they'd burn in hell for all eternity. And the indigenous people are going, what the fuck? Or the equivalent thereof. But what could they do? The white people show up with thunder sticks, boom, which makes people die. In Canada, generations of First Nations people, Indigenous children, were forced into these Christian schools, most of which were run by the Catholic Church. A few were run by a couple of Protestant denominations, but it was the Holy Roman Church that decided that they were so full of shit that there could be no dissent. They had to make sure that everybody got sucked into this crazed belief of theirs, and anyone who wasn't would be apostate, would be a heretic, would be killed. That's how much faith they had in their religion. If you don't accept what we tell you, we'll fucking kill you. That's the way religion works. In Canada, the school system was called the residential school system. And it was described as a form of cultural genocide back in 2015 by a Canadian National Truth and Reconciliation Commission. See, they've done it. South Africa's done it. Australia's done it. But in this country, oh, fuck no. We're not going to do it. The Truth Commission also concluded that many of these students were physically and emotionally abused and killed in the name of the baby Jesus and the Roman Church and the Christian God. Now, according to the New York Times, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in 2015 came up with 94 recommendations on how to bring about truth and how to reconcile all the evil that the white Europeans and the Roman Church had done to so many people on so many different continents. It was just fucking unending, the mayhem and torture and death and destruction that the Christian faith brought to these people. Among its 94 recommendations was a call for an apology from the Pope. That's like asking white people in this country to acknowledge white privilege in all its manifestations and all the results of white privilege that bring poison and shit and death and murder onto black people in this country. And what do white people say? I didn't own any slaves. I don't have anything to do with that. Why should I apologize? Even though nobody's asking for individual apologies, we're asking for an apology. I shouldn't say we. They are asking for an apology by the government of the United States, which allegedly, this is not true, allegedly represents the people, doesn't represent the people. So, here's an answer from Bishop Lionel Gendron, who is president of the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops. He wrote an open letter to Canada's Indigenous people. It was released Tuesday. Here's what it said in part, quote, The Holy Father is aware of the findings of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which he takes seriously. But after carefully considering the request and extensive dialogue with the bishops of Canada, he felt that he could not personally respond, end quote. So, Pope Francis, the Holy Father, the direct communication with God. In fact, it's God's spokesman on earth. Can't be bothered. In contravention of everything the Christian faith teaches, the Pope can't participate. Now, the truth is, the Pope and other popes before him have responded to requests like this in other situations. They have issued apologies. The most notorious apology, of course, came from Francis trying to apologize for centuries of child rape by priests. Centuries of it. Thousands of children raped, brutalized, sexually violated. And the Pope apologized for it. Hey, we're sorry. Hey, sorry. But as far as this request, the Vatican did not respond to an email from the New York Times seeking comment last night. Yeah, fuck it. Perry Bellegarde, the national chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Canada's largest indigenous group, said he was disappointed by the church's decision and would continue to press the Vatican for an apology. Good luck, Barry. Good luck. Why should the church apologize? All they did was destroy cultures, commit cultural genocide, just like has been established. Not to mention real genocide. Anyway, Chief Bellegarde said, quote, "We don't give up. It would be a great act of healing and a great act of reconciliation if it were to happen. The Pope would issue an apology. Let's see if we can alleviate their fears, whatever they are." So the victims, and isn't this just like the goddamn church? The victims of church torture and death and destruction are trying to figure out a way to alleviate the fears of the church hierarchy that an apology would somehow, what, jeopardize their power? "We will try to alleviate their fears, whatever they are," said Chief Bellegarde. I'll be goddamned. Now, last May, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister, on a visit to the Vatican, asked Pope Francis to issue an apology. And yesterday, the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, expressed disappointment that that was the reaction from his Holy Father in this. He told reporters in Ottawa that his government would keep working on reconciliation, quote, "because we know taking responsibility for past mistakes and asking forgiveness is something that is core to our values as Canadians," end quote. Right, but it's also a core value, if not the essential value, to Christianity. So I've been told. But apparently not. Now, for the Protestant churches who participated in this cultural genocide, they issued apologies in the 1990s. They already did. The Anglican Church, the Presbyterian Church, the United Churches in Canada, they also operated these shitholes, these so-called schools, where they would take little kids in and completely fuck up their minds and their culture and the energy that had been flowing through these people for millennia. But all of a sudden, the white Christians show up. That shit's going to stop. Why is it going to stop? Because it's not Christian. Doesn't really answer my question, does it? Why is it going to stop? So the Protestants apologized. And 10 years ago, that old right-wing son of a bitch, Stephen Harper, Prime Minister at the time, apologized on behalf of the government. And he's the one who established the Reconciliation Commission. If an old right-wing fart like Stephen Harper can apologize, can you imagine Trump or George Bush apologizing for what happened here to indigenous people? No, you can't. But this right-wing former Prime Minister Stephen Harper, not only did he apologize on behalf of the Canadian government, but he established the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I don't like Harper, but I got to give him props for that. Now, Chief Bellegarde said that Pope Francis's direct apology a couple of years ago during a trip to Bolivia, that's another country where the indigenous people were told that they were sick and fucked up because they didn't know who Jesus was or whatever. But Chief Bellegarde said that that direct apology for what the Pope called grave sins committed by the church against indigenous people in the Americas, plural. That apology gave Chief Bellegarde the confidence that a similar apology for running these schools was still possible. Now, a couple of facts presented here by the New York Times. The schools operated from 1883 until the last one closed in 1998. And the Truth and Reconciliation Commission found that children were severely punished for speaking indigenous languages. Severely punished for speaking the way their mothers and fathers and grandparents and great-grandparents had taught them. The white Christians punished them for using their own language or for following their cultural practices. That, you know, that is other than mass murder, like the Nazis did to the Jews, this is a close second to how to destroy millions of people. Take away from them their lives, that'll work. Take away from them everything that constitutes who they are. And tell them that if you even acknowledge who you are, we will fucking beat you. Or worse. Why worse? The commission found or concluded that 3,201 students died while in the schools, often from mistreatment or neglect. You're going to speak your little fucked up language, then we'll put you down in a stone basement and leave you there. Until you realize that Jesus is your friend. And Jesus doesn't want you speaking that gibberish shit. You'll speak English or French. Thomas Rees, a veteran Vatican watcher and senior analyst at Religion News Service, said this, quote, "The big question now is what is the position of the Canadian bishops on this, because Pope Francis has made it clear that he wants to decentralize authority. And of course, the Catholic conservatives are going out of their fucking crawl space because that sounds a little bit too democratic, you know, to decentralize authority away from Rome. And Rome is a direct pipeline to God himself. Ooh, that's awful. But the Vatican watcher, Thomas Rees, said the big question is, what is the position of the Catholic bishops on this? If the bishops are saying, don't do it, don't issue an apology, then the Pope is getting mixed signals, and he tends to support the local bishops. Yeah, because it's politics. This has nothing to do with spiritual development, has nothing to do with worship, has nothing to do with finding a greater source of power outside of oneself. It has nothing to fucking do with that. It has to do with power, political power, period. Enough power so that the bishops and the priests and whoever the hell they are can continue raping children. What the fuck is wrong with raping children? Seems to be their attitude, because it still goes on. According to the Times, some of the jerk-offs in the Vatican have worried about the legal implications of apologies in cases with potentially large damages. Whoa! And then there's this. Listen to this. About 50 Catholic organizations agreed to a financial settlement in the case of residential schools, but were unable to raise enough money to fully cover the commitment. So in 2015, a court in Canada ruled that they were released from fulfilling the agreement. Unable to raise the money? Are you shitting me? The Catholic Church, probably the single wealthiest organization in the history of the fucking human race. It's been going on longer than Goldman Sachs. It's been going on for 2,000 years, and they couldn't raise money? Bullshit! Start by selling some of your frescoes, you know, the Michelangelo stuff and the Da Vinci stuff and the vaults full of gold and jewels and shit that you've stolen from people all over the planet. Turn it into Canadian dollars and pay for these people, you lying, hypocritical bastards. Now, recent popes have made a habit of public apologies, right? PR, marketing. For example, John Paul II, after apologizing for Catholic involvement in the slave trade. Jesus Christ sold slaves! Or at least his followers did, right? After apologizing for Catholic involvement in the slave trade, the church's treatment of Jews, have you done what I suggested starting 20 years ago? Go to your Google, type in Catholic priests, Nazis, and sit back and look at some of the old films that are going to pop up for you to look at and marvel. Priests giving the Hitler salute as they marched Jews into the ovens. After apologizing for Catholic involvement in the slave trade, the church's treatment of Jews, and treating Galileo as a heretic, oh, let's not forget that, John Paul II issued back in 2000 a sweeping blanket request for forgiveness for the church's sins over the past 2,000 years. Hold on just a minute here. That's not the way it works, Pope. Hey, can I just get one massive request in? Forgive us for everything we've done for the past 2,000 years. That would include the Crusades and all the goddamn Inquisitions and all the cultural genocide and the physical genocide. Can we just bunch it all up and just get it all the fuck together and I'll say, hamana, 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 I'm sorry. Yeah. John Paul II said, quote, recognizing the deviations of the past, deviations, serves to reawaken our consciences to the compromises of the present. What the fuck does that mean? What is that, theological horse shit to get them over the hump of all the damage they've done? And in 2010, you remember Pope Benedict XVI, huh? Wasn't he a winner? He apologized with what he called shame and remorse to the victims of centuries of sexual abuse by Catholic priests in Ireland. In addition to his apology in Bolivia, Francis asked for forgiveness last year for the church's role in the Rwanda genocide in 1994. As recently as this past January, Francis apologized to Chilean victims of abuse, though he created a much larger problem for himself and his holy position when he defended the Chilean bishop accused of covering up that abuse. Apologies only go so far, right, Pope? Anyways, the Times reports the letter to Canada's Indigenous people said the Pope was considering a trip to Canada and would make meeting Indigenous people a priority if he happens to go to Canada. Well, isn't that special? I may go, I may not go. I may meet with you, I may not meet with you. But if you want an apology, I'm sorry. Jesus tells me not to apologize. Let's take another break here, Catherine, if you don't mind. Oh, God, this is these topics tonight are just kind of making me nauseous. And I don't have my squeeze ball. I'll be right back. You know, this is not good news. Nothing on this podcast is ever good news. But according to CNN, in the period of time following the Valentine's massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, the National Rifle Association saw a really significant spike in donations to that Nazi organization. This is why I have really, I'm afraid, lost about 99.6% of any hope that I might have had about a political solution to the shit that this country is involved in right now. And it's so much. But reports from the Federal Election Commission show that donations to the National Rifle Association's political victory fund tripled in February over what it was in January. Tripled. In January, the NRA collected about $250,000 in individual contributions. In February, they collected $800,000. I mean, there's sickness, there's insanity, and then there's this. 17 people, including 15 students, are murdered. And people feel a need to contribute money to the fucking National Rifle Association, which has, for the past 40 years, done everything it could to prevent sensible, sane gun laws from being put in place. I know that nobody listening or nobody who contributed to the NRA is listening to this program. But if there were, I would just like to say you people are just fucking evil. You're just like the head of the SBC here, the Southern Baptist Convention, or the rest of these religious fucks. You are evil. You are evil. 17 people are butchered in a school, and you filthy sons of bitches show your remorse and your concern by contributing money to the NRA? God damn you. Oh, man. The Nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics, which tracks political spending, tracked itemized contributions. That would be donations of $200 or more by an individual in the days before the mass killing in Parkland, Florida, and the days after. According to their data, in the 2 weeks after the shooting, itemized contributions to the NRA doubled from the previous 2 weeks. They also found that the number of people contributing in the 7 days after the shooting increased almost 500% from the week before. And this particular fund that people were contributing all this money to, the NRA's political victory fund, the political death fund, the bloody fucking murder fund, the destroy America's kids fund, the murder people at a concert fund, the shoot people up in a church fund, you bastards. That fund contributes money to political campaigns for the gun lovers who run for Congress, the nut fucks, the crazy ones. But it's only one of the ways that this filthy fascist organization receives and then spends money. Again, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, the NRA spent $50.2 million on 7 key races during the 2016 cycle. Now, remember, the NRA was getting money from Russia, too. These fuckers, it's just, do you not believe, truth seekers, that fascism is just all over the United States, no matter what level you look, politics, religion, industry? $50 million. $20 million went to this filthy piece of human waste that calls himself president. You know, I get questions sometimes from people, especially back when this was a radio show, when I used to get enraged about this shit, but I didn't use the gutter language that I use now. And I used to get emails from people that say, you know, why do you get so upset about this shit? They could say shit in an email, but I couldn't say shit on the air. Why do you get so upset about this shit? I mean, come on, Malloy, take a break. How old are you? Isn't it time for you to retire or kick back? Or you're not going to change anything. We enjoy listening to you, but you get a little hysterical. Why don't you back off? The variants of that kind of an email. And I didn't try to answer emails like that. What am I going to say? You know, what am I going to say that doesn't sound like I'm trying to set myself up as some sort of a moral authority on things? You know, I just know what's right and what's wrong. Don't you? Yes, you do. You know what's right and what's wrong. You know. There is a part of you. Al Capp used to call it some gland. Al Capp, the guy that wrote the comic strip Little Abner. But he had a word for it. I forget now, so long ago. But there, allegedly, in Al Capp's comic strip world, there was a gland, I think it was Al Capp, that would secrete when you were doing things like that were honest and ethical and upright. The secretions would make you feel good. And when you were being a shithead, the secretions would make you feel bad. And that's how you knew. Now, I don't have one of those, but and neither do you, because they're not existent. But you do know, don't you? You do know when something there are some gray areas, but you know when things are being done right or properly or ethically and when they're not, right? I don't believe that in the relativism of human behavior, that at times something that is horrible, some action taken is horrible, but other times the same action taken would be honorable. No, I don't believe that. Now, somebody will say, well, in other words, what you mean is if somebody kills 100 people who are about to kill 1 million people, you think that's wrong, as compared to 100 people who or 100 people who are not killed. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But I get angry because of my own impotence. I think that's what for me anyway, expression of anger comes from a feeling of total impotence, that I know that there is absolutely nothing that I can do to change anything. I just sit here and talk about it. BFD, right? But I guess what it is in my own little unmeasurable teeny little piece of consciousness or the universe or however you want to explain it, the Godhead, call it what you want, I share with you, I hope, that awareness. And I realize over here in this little corner, there's nothing. nothing I can do except bitch and scream and use bad words. And there's nothing you can do either. But you know what? If there were 10 or 20 million of us, maybe 30 million, I don't know what the number would be. But if on a given day, at a given time, a given moment, through some Jungian connection of the uber consciousness, or whatever the hell you want to call it, everybody would respond and say, you know, enough of this kind of human behavior. We can't wait for evolution, if evolution would weed some of this stuff out, you know. I guess evolution taught us not to eat each other for the most part. But how long would it take for evolution to provide that little gland that Al Capp used to talk about or write about, where you'd know instantly your system would flood with a good feeling or flood with a bad feeling, dependent upon your behavior. So the screaming and shrieking and shouting and cursing that some people come to this program for, this podcast for, simply to watch it, because it's a real freak show. I've watched some of my YouTube videos. Some of them are just, you know, embarrassing. In the moment, they're not embarrassing. I'm never embarrassed about what I'm screaming or screeching about in the moment. But when I look at them 2 or 3 days later, I just go, oh, my God. Does he really think he's going to change anything? No. No, I don't. I don't think I'm going to change anything, ever. I don't think I ever have. Well, let me rephrase it. I know I never have. I've tried to participate in change movements along with hundreds of thousands of other people, but change anything? No. No, 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 no. So the screaming and the shrieking that I do on this podcast is directly connected to that feeling of impotence, that feeling of frustration. And and part of it too, I don't know if you have come to terms with your own mortality, you know, your lifespan. I've been working on that for about 10 years now. I don't know that I have either. I'm not facing imminent death right now that I'm aware of. You know, any of us could go on from one heartbeat to the next. But coming to terms with one's own mortality, if such a thing is even necessary, I don't know, we human beings might think we're extra special. I mean, we have a God, right? Or several of them, right? So we must be special. Yeah. So possibly facing one's mortality is a stupid concept, because whether you face it or not, it's there, you know. You look at our, what's the proper phrase now, our animal companions. I have a couple of dogs who are my pets. But I know it's proper to call them animal companions. And you know, the two dogs we have here give us an awful lot of comfort. But I know, and Kathy knows, and Molly knows, because we had to do this to a cat, when the time comes to end their lives, we have to do it, because they're living in unbelievable pain or disease or whatever. And it's just a simple thing. You take your pet to the euthanizer and take the you either take the little corpse home or you leave it there and they incinerate it. And you get a little package, I guess, of if you want it, of ashes. But being human and knowing, even though we don't, you know, we try not to know this. We all do. I tried for decades not to know that I was mortal or that there was an endpoint to my consciousness, my life. But we all have to face that one way or the other. Well, we don't have to face it, but we will face it one way or the other. So because of that, I'm trying to get to the point here. Because of that, it's a contributing factor to the frustration that I feel about not mattering worth a goddamn. Now, I matter to my kids, my wife, and when they were alive, my parents, my siblings. So the frustrations that eat at me, and maybe they eat at you too. I don't know. Maybe you have screaming matches too, just like I do. Maybe you scream into the night or howl at the moon like I do because you're so angry and you see what is happening. You see it as clearly as you see your hand in front of your face on a sunny day. You know what's happening. You know it's wrong. You know it is anti-life. You know that it is anti-spirituality. You know all this, and there's nothing you can do. So what do a lot of people do? They just say, well, I'm going to withdraw, go inside, and take care of this piece of the cosmic consciousness. Okay, that's one way to do it. But it seems like the other way, you know, a connection, a cosmic expansion would, or a conscious expansion would be better than a conscious withdrawal, doesn't it? I don't know. I'm rambling, and I'm going to stop. Kathy, will you give me a break here? And we'll come back, and I want to talk just for a second about the potential of the midterms coming up this November. I'll be right back. I don't know if you're aware of it, but Donald Trump's poll numbers are going up. And the lead that Democrats had in among the potential voters coming up in November, the lead at one point was 10, 12 points. It's now down to 6. You know it's going to happen, don't you? This is a new CNN poll conducted by a polling agency, SSRS. Anyway, the poll finds that 50% of registered voters say they prefer a Democrat in their congressional district. 44% say they want a Republican. That's a major shift in favor of the Republicans since February, when Democrats – I'm sorry, I was wrong. It wasn't a 10-point lead. In February, Democrats held a 16-point lead. Now it's down to 6. Why do you suppose that is? Is it a result of Trump's sterling leadership? One thing the polling found, though, is that Democratic voters are much more enthusiastic about getting off their asses and going to vote in November in the midterms. About half, 51% of Democrats or Democrat-leading independents say they are extremely or very enthusiastic about voting for Congress in November, compared with just 36% among Republicans and Republican-leaning independents. There's a bunch of numbers here, but yeah, Trump's approval rating has ticked up to 42%. That's the highest since the 100-day mark of his presidency. 46%. This is why we're fucked. You don't need any more proof of the terrible future that's waiting for the American public, and it is going to be a mindfuck. You don't need any more proof than that number, that 46% of Americans, according to this poll, and I realize a poll is a snapshot, and I realize this, and I realize that, but since that's the basis on which a lot of decisions are made, poll numbers, we'll go along with this one too. 46% of Americans consider Trump to be a leader, at least to the extent that they support him. That's insanity. That's madness. It's also a clear indication of what I said a second ago, what this country is setting itself up for. We're just about finished on the global stage. Now, I don't know if we're going to exit with a minimum amount of insanity, like the British Empire, or the Russian Empire, or the Mongol Empire. Okay, you can make your arguments. There was a lot of bloodshed. Right. Or the Ottoman Empire. That was World War I. But I just wonder how much death and destruction is going to result because of the end of America's hegemony and imperialist and colonial attitudes around the planet. Because we're finished as a global power. We're finished. Trump is making sure that the United States is finished, because Trump doesn't give a shit about this country. He doesn't care about anything except, you know, that and how much money he's going to make. Doesn't care about anything. And he happens to be president. He's illiterate. He's an asshole. Can't function. Can't lead. A failure. In everything he's ever done, he's failed. And now he's failing as the head of the United States. And he's dragging the country down with him. I wonder what it'll be like. I probably won't be alive to experience this, but I wonder what it'll be like to be a third-rate political power on the planet, or a third-rate former leader. I know the Brits went through this. The French went through it. Not the Russians. The Russians is a whole different thing. But what's it going to be like when the U.S. has been reduced? Probably, possibly be a good thing if we had good leadership. If we would get rid of the political class as it is today, and instead of a political class, have a leadership class, big difference, maybe it'd be a good thing. I've talked about this before. If the United States would just stop with this militaristic bullshit that we have punctured the entire planet with. What's the number? We have military forces in 80 countries, 90 countries, a million countries, whatever the fuck the number is. It's so outrageous. It's like Roman legions, you know? It's crazy. And now various countries in Africa are starting to take note of AFRICOM, the U.S. military's command and control center, to handle Africa. We have six or seven of those comms, command centers. And the AFRICOM is relatively new, 10 years, if that, 8 years. I think it was established during the Bush years, so it'd be more than 8 or 10 years. And I was reading in the Times today that certain countries in Africa are taking note of the fact that all of a sudden, here is this presence, the American military, moving in, working deals with the leadership of some of these countries who are just dictators anyway, or short-lived rulers who aren't going to be around that much longer. But those are the people the deals are being made with by the U.S. military, or whoever makes these deals for the military. I have no idea. They just always seem to manifest, don't they? So some of the people in these various countries, I think the one I saw an example is Chad, that the people who are actually citizens of these countries are taking a look at the U.S. encroachment, and they're starting to be a bit concerned, as well they should be. Because we're not there. The United States is not there for peaceful, benevolent reasons. We're there for military reasons. We're there for resource reasons, resource extraction from these countries. We're there to make sure that the world continues to know that the U.S., you don't fuck with the U.S. But the reality is, this is not – we had our century. This is not the American century anymore. This just simply isn't. It isn't. Now, a lot of people say it's a Chinese century. Maybe. But it may not be any one national century. You know what I mean? It may just degenerate into global chaos where nobody is really the big dog, the head cheese. It just seems like there is some rough times coming. Rough times. Here's one of the reasons. The pigs in the Trump administration, the EPA and blah, 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 they are delaying or have delayed action on dangerous solvents that the EPA had previously planned to ban under Obama. The agency had been, the EPA had been in the process of restricting the use of the three commonly available chemicals. They are TCE, I have no idea what it is, NMP, and methylene chloride. Now, these three, it says here what the use is. This is from The Intercept. They're used to strip furniture, remove grease, and dry clean clothing. All three are extremely dangerous, lethal, poisonous. The EPA had deemed that this one chemical, TCE, is a carcinogen, quote, by all routes of exposure, end quote. Skin contact, breathing, any kind of contact, inhaling, well, that's breathing. That no matter how you're exposed to this chemical, you're exposing yourself to a carcinogen. NMP is a developmental toxin, which means it goes right for those little fetoids and fucks them up pretty good. And methylene chloride has killed at least 56 people since 1980, many of whom were stripping bathtubs. You know, the fumes. So, the Obama administration's EPA came to the conclusion, which would be obvious to you or to me, that these chemicals should not be available for our exposure. I mean, if you want to strip your bathtub, I don't know, use sand. Get a goddamn sandblaster. How about that? Might take longer. And you got to wear those goggles. But at least it's not a chemical poison that's going to attack fetuses. But the Trump administration? Nah. The Trump administration has said, we're not going to take quick action on those three. Or perhaps any dangerous chemicals. Why should we? You know, the chemical industry provides the Republican Party and Donald Trump and a number of Democrats with an awful lot of fucking money. These people in Congress, in the White House, they, listen up, do not, this is a newsflash, represent us. Newsflash my ass. They don't represent us. They haven't represented us for a good half century. And yet we continue to pretend like they do. Oh, my God. The fuck is wrong with us? Our interests are not being represented by the people that we elect to do just that. Or maybe we don't elect them to do that. Maybe we elect them to fuck over the people we don't like. Maybe that's it. Anyway, this new regulatory plan, which the Trump administration released recently, showed that the chemicals I just mentioned were moved from the proposed rule category. We might come up with rules for these to a category called long-term action, which means we're not going to do shit about them. In all, get this number. Two numbers I want you to listen to. 469 Obama-era regulations were trashed away. And another 860 were put on hold. Now, to the average right-winger, nut fuck, well, we should 860 regulations? Jesus Christ, where do we live? The Soviet Union? I mean, I believe in freedom. Yeah, you believe in the freedom that your children should be poisoned and you should die. And all those cancers you're going to get cancers all over your fucking body and every one of your organs because you believe that TCE and NMP and methylene chloride are good. If Trump says, we're not going to restrict the use of those, what the fuck? The chemical industry are my friends. Now, there was no mandatory rule for finalizing what the Obama administration tried to do with these rules, saying this shit's got to come out of the market, out of the environment, away from contact with humans and other living things. There was no mandatory date for making that happen. But even so, the bans were widely expected to take effect this year, 2018, except for one thing. It's not going to happen now. And that term, long-term action, like I said, that means progress will be slowed, probably stopped, probably forgotten. Now, The Intercept writes that the EPA did not respond to specific questions for this article, but provided a link to information on the regulatory plan, which included this quote from EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. Quote, EPA's plan balances its statutory requirements to issue regulations and its commitment to providing regulatory certainty through improvements to existing regulations that were flawed, outdated, ineffective, or, I love this one, unnecessarily burdensome. Burdensome to whom? To what? Burdensome to the, as the Christian right wing and the political right wing like to talk about, the unborn, the pre-humans, the pre-birth children? Is it burdensome to them, the ones whose little developing brains are going to not develop because of this shit? Huh? Is it burdensome to them? No, it's burdensome to the chemical companies. It's burdensome to the capitalist predators who no more care about some imaginary fetus than they care about a toenail problem. They don't give a shit. Existing regulations that were flawed. Yeah, they're flawed because they're not strong enough. Outdated. Yeah, they're outdated because there are literally thousands of chemicals that the EPA hasn't even tested. Ineffective? Yeah. The rules are existing regulations are ineffective because they're not enforced or unnecessarily burdensome because it means some filthy, destructive chemical company might have to write a report or follow a procedure in order to use a certain poisonous chemical, right? Chemical safety advocates point out the obvious, that any delay in restricting, regulating, or removing this poison from our environment leaves the public, that's you and me, at risk. Richard Dennison, lead senior scientist at the Environmental Defense Fund, said this, quote, "We have people literally dying from the continued access to products at your local hardware store that can kill you." And the EPA still refuses to act. ACE is the place to get your ass dead. Dennison went on, quote, "This EPA seems to have put a premium on meeting its deadlines. But when it comes to chemical-specific action, they're all about delay," end quote. products at your local hardware store that can and will kill you. So, the General Counsel for the Safer Chemicals Healthy Families Coalition and former attorney for the EPA, his name is Bob Sussman, he said this, quote, "These are bellwether proposals. This is the first time EPA is proposing significant regulation. It is a test of whether the expectations for the new law will be met. If EPA can't summon the willpower to finalize these very compelling proposed rules, it's not going to be able to regulate anything." Bingo, Bob. That's the whole fucking idea. That's why Trump appointed this person to run the VA. Privatize it. This person to run the EPA, destroy it. This person to run the education department, eliminate it. This person to run the energy department, cancel everything except fossil fuels. That's what the Trump cabinet is designed and charged with doing. And it's only going to get worse because even the nut fucks that they had in there are slowly being replaced by even nuttier assholes. Nutty is, that's too easy a term. Psychopaths, killers, destroyers. What was it that Oppenheimer said, Kathy? I am death, destroyer of worlds. Was that the...
After he made the...
Yeah, when the first nuclear bomb went off. And I am death... destroyer of worlds. And finally tonight, our good friend Uncle Ben Carson, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, working under the direction of the white man who hired him, HUD is attempting to scale back federal efforts to enforce fair housing laws. They're also freezing enforcement actions against local governments and businesses, including Facebook, while sidelining officials who have aggressively pursued civil rights cases where it concerns housing. And Uncle Ben Carson is showing himself to be a house Negro. He's showing himself to be willing to trade off responsibilities to run housing and urban development, pursue civil rights cases, go up against governments that won't enforce fair housing laws. He's going to give all that up so he can sit at the masses' feet. He wants to be able to sit at the masses' feet. Right, Uncle Ben? Huh? You want to sit there and strum your banjo, don't you? Huh? And get that paycheck and try to buy that $31,000 dinette set that you and your old lady want, right? He laid it off on his wife. Remember that? Jesus Christ. This shift in what the responsibilities of housing and urban development are was detailed in interviews with 20, this is the New York Times, 20 current and former Department of Housing and Urban Development officials and in internal agency emails. All of this is meant to roll back the Obama administration's attempts to reverse decades of racial, ethnic, and income segregation in federally subsidized housing and development projects. Federally. That means it's run on our dollars, yours and mine, tax dollars. And we don't have anything to say about this. But the massa, that big, large, white piece of shit in the White House, is telling his house Negro, what's his name, Ben Carson, stop the enforcement, boy. And of course, old Ben, whatever. You're the man. Whatever. Advocates for the poor and career HUD officials say that Mr. Carson, a retired neurosurgeon, and his political appointees have begun weakening the department's fair housing division at a critical moment. The agency now has its greatest leverage to right past wrongs thanks to the $28 billion in disaster recovery community development block grants that Congress has appropriated to rebuild the Gulf Coast and Puerto Rico after Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. But it's not going to happen. That's it for me for this particular exciting 2 hours. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.